You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Joining me as always, Rob Rang. Happy Wednesday to all of our listeners. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to builtbar.com and use promo code Locked On, and you'll get $10 off your next order. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. Rob, we all know if Russell Wilson gets hurt, the Seahawks are screwed. But they did add some extra depth at the quarterback position yesterday, claiming Danny Etling, former Purdue quarterback, who spent the past couple years, originally was with the Patriots, and then last year was with the Atlanta Falcons. Former seventh-round selection, was with LSU at the end of his college career. He started at Purdue and then transferred to LSU, had a solid final season with the Tigers, was picked in the 2018 NFL draft. And what makes this an intriguing pickup, I think if he was just a quarterback and that's the only position he'd ever played, considering Geno Smith and Anthony Gordon are already on the roster, I think that this probably would have quickly slipped under the rug in terms of being in the news cycle. But Etling was a player that the Patriots actually attempted to move to the receiver position. And I have an interesting perspective on this, and I'll share that a little bit more here in a moment. But this guy is an underrated athlete, and that is all you need to know right there, that the Patriots and Bill Belichick tried to change him to the receiver position.
Yeah, I think it's a heck of a compliment to Etling and his athletic ability. I mean, this is a 6'3", 215-pound guy, at least in his college days when I was scouting him, as you mentioned, at Purdue and at LSU to wrap up his career. And this was a quarterback that, including at LSU, was a very productive player. I mean, he had 27 touchdowns against just 7 interceptions in 2 seasons as LSU's primary starter. He had similar success in his first couple of years, as you mentioned, at Purdue. He doesn't have an absolute cannon for an arm, but he is an underrated athlete. He does have good touch on the deep ball, which fits in with the Seattle scheme. And that would be the biggest thing that I would mention here, Corbin, is how he fits in with Seattle scheme. You have a quarterback in Anthony Gordon from Washington State who's got a really quick release, but he's not a dynamic athlete. Geno Smith is a solid athlete as well, but certainly nothing like Russell Wilson. And I'm not suggesting that Etling is Russell Wilson as well, but he is a quarterback that has some mobility and then has the accuracy on those deeper balls, the long balls where you have to have the touch that fits in with Seattle's play action game. So I like the signing for Seattle because obviously you didn't have to give up anything to get him. This is a quarterback who is familiar with the Atlanta Falcons, who of course is Seattle's game one opponent. And while you can make an argument that can be overstated, I don't know that it can be at the quarterback position. I think this is a nice signing by Seattle and one that is going to help them regardless of whether he makes the roster, just because it's going to add to their familiarity of the Atlanta Falcons.
So I actually coached high school football for several years in Indiana, and Etling obviously started his career at Purdue, and he came from a high school in Terre Haute, and my school actually played against his school, and he gave us all kinds of fits. He was obviously, being a Division I, a Big Ten recruit, this guy was the best quarterback that was in the entire conference and absolutely dominated us. And our team was not very good that year, but still, this guy was clearly a D1 prospect, one of the best quarterbacks in the state of Indiana, ended up at Purdue that next season as one of their top recruits. And so I've got the perspective of seeing the athleticism on display. And I remember them running a lot of read option with him, letting him run the football. And in his preseason action with the New England Patriots and Atlanta Falcons, he has 235 rushing yards and a touchdown on just 27 attempts. So you have seen the athleticism translate at least to exhibition games at the NFL level. He hasn't played any snaps in the regular season, but I agree with you. This is a good player to take a flyer on, and I know I scoffed at this notion the other day, but he has played for the first two teams that are on Seattle's schedule to open the season as well, so I don't really think that factors much into this, but that's something worth noting. You're getting an athletic quarterback that has played some receiver in the NFL, at least on the practice field, and you're getting a guy that has played for the Falcons and Patriots – first two teams on your schedule. So seems like it's well worth it. You can bring him in. He can compete right now, probably a camp body. But if he comes in and really lights it up for a few days, then maybe he makes things interesting there with that backup quarterback competition. Etling was not the only player to join the Seahawks roster yesterday. They got the roster back to the 80-man max by signing a defensive tackle. It was not Damon Harrison. It was not Marcel Darius. Instead, it was P.J. Johnson, who recently visited the team, a seventh rounder out of Arizona in 2019 by the Detroit Lions. No stats, has not played an NFL game yet, but getting to see him on the field yesterday, he kind of looks like Damon Harrison, not quite as big, but 6'3", 320 pounds, a big body defensive tackle. They certainly needed the depth, and this is an unproven player that has the size and the physicality that they're looking for. So they're going to give him an extended look here at training camp.
Yeah, it's an interesting signing. I mean, you and I, of course, Corbin, have been kind of clamoring for the Seahawks to address the interior of their defensive line, and so you're doing that here with this signing. And P.J. Johnson, a little bit like Etling, I think is a player that still has some untapped potential. Etling, is, as we talked about, making that transfer from Purdue, where he didn't have a lot of talent around him, to LSU, where he had all kinds of talent around him. But when he was at LSU, it wasn't the quick-hitting, almost air raid-like scheme that we saw Joe Burrow, just absolutely exploding a year ago. This was back to the old LSU of running the football and throwing the ball over the top. And I mentioned that because it kind of sapped some of the statistics that Etling might have been able to produce. When you watch him on tape, you see an awful lot of drops from his LSU teammates. The same thing here with P.J. Johnson. I mean, this is a guy that signed with Arizona as a junior college prospect, and he only had 2 years at Arizona. And the Arizona Wildcats, frankly, haven't been playing very good football for a long time now. And one of the things that the teams were able to do in the Pac-12 was just basically run the ball down their throats. And that's not something you would expect if you have a guy who's going to be a future NFL draft pick, manning the inside at 6'3", 330 pounds. But at the same time, when you watch him on tape, you see some splashy plays. I don't think that he's going to be able to give you much in terms of a pass rush. That's not his game. But in terms of just being able to hold up at the point of attack, he's got the frame. He's got the long arms, 33 1/8 inch arm. And this is a guy that, again, I think that because you didn't have to, give up anything to get him, I think that it just makes your roster that much better suited or better able to handle the complexities that is the 2020 NFL season.
The only thing about this signing that fans are probably going to be a little bit upset about is just the fact that, as we've talked about time and time again, the Seahawks' biggest issue at defensive tackle right now is the lack of experience. And P.J. Johnson, as I mentioned a few moments ago, has not played in an NFL game. So you still only have 4 games of experience behind Puna Ford and Jaron Reed. You still have to believe that they are kicking some tires on some veterans out there like Marcel Darius if Damon Harrison wants to play. I'm becoming more skeptical that Harrison is going to want to play this year. Plenty of time for players to still change their minds and want to go out and play. But at this point, Johnson coming in gives them a little bit of depth, a little bit of insurance, and they should be getting Puna Ford back from injury soon. Reed was back at the practice field the last couple of days, so they look to be in better shape there than what they were last Friday. When we come back for the second quarter, speaking of injuries, the Seahawks continue to have issues with top draft picks having injuries in training camp or arriving as rookies coming off of surgeries. Recent one being Daryl Taylor, who has yet to suit up for the Seahawks on the practice field and still might be a few weeks away. So we're going to revisit what's been a rough 5 years with top draft picks for the Seahawks. You're listening to Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As an avid weightlifter and distance runner, I'm always looking for an edge when it comes to nutrition, seeking delicious, healthy protein bars without the crazy additives. Since being diagnosed with celiac disease, my options have been pretty limited, until now. Enter in the Built Bar, a low-calorie, low-sugar, high-protein, gluten-free protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. Built Bar now comes in 18 mouth-watering flavors, including 6 new delicious flavors such as caramel brownie and cookies and cream. My all-time favorite is peanut butter brownie, which is 20 grams of protein, just 3 grams of sugar, and 3 grams of net carbs. Since I had my first Built Bar, I never go without one when I hit the weight room or go for a jog. All Built Bars are 100% chocolate, nut and gluten-free, soft and easy to chew, and don't have the nasty aftertaste of competing protein bars. Sound too good to be true? Go to BuiltBar.com and build your own custom box with your choice of flavors using the code LOCKEDON for $10 off. You will also receive a free cooler with your first purchase while supplies last. So what are you waiting for? Change your workout game by going to BuiltBar.com and entering code LOCKEDON for $10 off. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, joined by Rob Rang. Later in the third quarter, we're going to be playing a little three up, three down. We'll get three offensive players that have helped their stock so far in training camp and three players that have not so much. But first, early on in John Schneider's tenure as general manager, Pete Carroll being the coach as well, the Seahawks had great success in the NFL draft, helping build a perennial contender. They've still made some really nice picks the last couple of years. We saw DK Metcalf come out and get 900 receiving yards last year as a second rounder out of Ole Miss. So they're still making some quality picks. But Rob, can't help but notice here, now with Daryl Taylor being on the sidelines, he's coming off of leg surgery. He had a rod put into his leg. And Pete Carroll sounded more pessimistic yesterday about his status than he did a week ago. And so that's leaving people a little bit scared, considering last year LJ Collier missed most of training camp and their entire preseason. We saw how much he struggled in his rookie year. Rashad Penny's had a couple of injuries. It just seems like they can't find any good luck with their high draft picks over the last half decade.
Yeah, it is. That is very disconcerting news about Daryl Taylor. And I think we all know how optimistic Pete Carroll generally is. So if he's anything other than just sunshine, then it is concerning. And Daryl Taylor is a player that I, for one, certainly have been basically anticipating getting or fighting for that starting role and perhaps being an instant star, because his track record of success in the SEC the last 2 years, finishing second in the conference in sacks as well as tackles for loss, despite changing positions and playing multiple roles at Tennessee, watching him a little bit at the Senior Bowl until they took him off the field and didn't allow him to participate because of the surgery that you just mentioned, having that steel rod put in his leg. That's the red flags. I mean, when the Seattle made the selection of Jordan Brooks and the selection of Daryl Taylor, and I had a lot of people who looked to me for draft evaluations, and they were wondering why I didn't have either of those players rated very highly. It's because I had medical questions about each of these guys myself. And yet we've seen the Seahawks do this multiple times. They did the same thing with Marquise Blair, a couple of years ago, who had struggled with durability earlier in his college career. And you mentioned DK Metcalf, and while Blair didn't have the injury issues a year ago, it was, maybe some other questions about his consistency and coverage. And DK Metcalf, of course, was healthy throughout the entire regular season a year ago. At the same time, it feels like Seattle is kind of playing with fire at times when it comes to the decisions they make with their rookies, because this is a track record that simply can't be ignored. They just had so many durability issues with so many of their top picks.
To this point, Taylor has not practiced yet for the Seahawks. Yesterday, he was doing some slow motion handwork on a dummy before the start of practice, and several reporters got that on video before they were stretching. And so maybe he's going to be back on the field here in the next few weeks. They're kind of up against the clock, though, as Pete Carroll said. They'd like to get a couple weeks of practice from him before he's in game action. And we have now less than a month until the Seahawks are playing the Falcons. And so it is a little bit disconcerting right now that he's not out there practicing when there was a lot of optimism that he was going to potentially be competing at that Leo spot. And as well as Benson Maioa has played in the first week of camp, you're now behind the eight ball a little bit. Every practice that you miss just puts you further and further behind there, especially without OTAs and mini camps this offseason. And so it's a difficult situation. You look back all the way back to 2016. Jermaine Ifedi was the first round pick for Seattle in 2016, and Ifedi missed the first couple of games dealing with an ankle injury. So there's your first major one. Then 2017, Malik McDowell. I don't know that we need to elaborate too much on what happened there, but ATV accident a week before the start of training camp, never played in a training camp practice or a game for the Seahawks. He's out of the league. Their second rounder that year, Ethan Posick, has had injury issues of his own, was on injured reserve twice last year for the Seahawks. The year before that, missed a bunch of games as well. And then 2018, this is the one that's crazy because, Rob, you're mentioning players like DK Metcalf that have injury histories, Marquise Blair that have injury histories. Rashad Penny did not have that injury history. That was one of the reasons the Seahawks were so excited to get him in the first round, as they thought they were getting a durable running back that hadn't missed games, was going to be able to be a workhorse in the NFL. And he's had several injuries, his latest being much more severe with a torn ACL that he's still trying to work back from. And so that's the thing that we have to understand here. People are going to be critical of the Seahawks, and some of these picks you can maybe understand given the medical history, but you just never know with this violent sport when injuries are going to hit, because Rashad Penny was as healthy as you're going to find for a running back, and yet his first 2 years he's had multiple injuries for the Seahawks and has just struggled to stay healthy. And then, of course, last year, LJ Collier as well, with that ankle sprain that he had. Once he returned, he was still not 100%. He was behind the eight ball, finished with three tackles in his rookie season, looks much better in training camp right now. Now that he's had another offseason to get in better shape, looks leaner, more explosive. So maybe you're going to get a much better second season out of him. But it's a very troubling trend that I don't know necessarily that you can blame the Seahawks for. I know they have taken some risks on some players that certainly had injury histories. But Penny, again, points to this being a case of luck just has not been on their side.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that Rashad Penny is definitely the best example of bad luck, for the Seahawks. Maybe Will Dissly as well, just because of the severity of his injuries and the fact that he wasn't somebody that struggled with injuries in his college career previous to that. So I think that there is something to be said for that. There's no doubt that this is not a situation where it's just the Seahawks. I mean, the football, as you mentioned, is, of course, such an incredibly physical sport. And the adjustment that all of these college players are making when they get to the NFL, and just the greater size and speed and pressure, frankly, to perform, I think it is all factors that play into this. And really, the Seahawks and their sports medicine group, sports science and all that, they do incredible amount of research. I mean, the amount of money and time that teams put into trying to predict which players are going to be able to remain healthy, it's much, much more than just looking at a couple of box scores and seeing who started throughout their college careers. So I think that all of those factors are in play, but at the bottom, at the end of the day, the most important thing is that you can't make a team if you're sitting on the sideline. And the Seahawks are a team that I certainly believe is a Super Bowl contender if that they can use everybody that's on their roster. I think that they are among the most talented teams in the league, but they need to have more impact from these young players, not just the rookies, but you mentioned guys like LJ Call. You need to have that bounce back season in year two.
Yeah, and this is going to be one of those things where the Seahawks had a ton of injuries last year, and it's cyclical. You're going to have years where you don't have as many, and there are going to be years like last year where you end the year with 1,000 guys on injured reserve. That's just the way that the NFL goes. But they changed their strength and conditioning coach last year, and Ivan Lewis came, originally was with Washington for a while, spent some time at USC as a strength and conditioning coach, and he was ran out of USC, not on the greatest of terms. And so that's something that a lot of fans have continually brought up on social media when these guys are getting hurt. And so that's something that I've seen several people go to. But when you look at that list, Lewis just came last year. So maybe you could say, well, a guy like LJ Collier got injured. Okay, well, maybe that's on the strength and conditioning staff. But, I mean, his ankle just got turned under him in a scrimmage. Things like that are going to happen. Malik McDowell, you can't blame a strength and conditioning coach for him getting in an ATV accident. I mean, nobody in the Seahawks organization knew that was going to come. I know there were maturity red flags there, but you can't predict that somebody's going to go do something like that. And Daryl Taylor had his injury at Tennessee and had surgery in January. So you certainly can't blame the strength and conditioning coach for that either. He's trying to work back from that operation and just isn't quite ready to be on the field. And so I think that some of those criticisms that have been out there, certainly there were a lot of injuries last year. If that happens again this season, there are other mitigating factors here to consider without offseason work. But I just think that it's way too early to jump to conclusions that we need to move on from our strength and conditioning coach this quickly. And I don't know that I would put that much blame on that staff for the injuries that happened last year. Again, this is just such a physical sport. You are going to have years like that where more guys go down with season-ending injuries. It's just the nature of the game. When we come back in the third quarter, it's time to play a little three up, three down here. Baseball-themed third quarter here for us here on Locked On Seahawks. Which offensive players have helped their stock for making the roster, and which ones maybe haven't helped themselves out too much in the first week of training camp? We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Crushing it at work or attempting to beat that impossible boss level on the latest video game? Even in these uncertain times, everyone has to eat, so why not take advantage of DoorDash to get takeout from your favorite restaurant? If I'm craving pizza, which is basically every day, and my girlfriend is craving sushi, there's something for both of us on DoorDash. Ordering is quick and easy with the DoorDash app, allowing you to support your favorite restaurants safely. With over 300,000 partners in the US, Canada, and Australia, you can support your local go-tos or your favorite national restaurants like Papa Murphy's and the Cheesecake Factory. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code LOCKEDON. That's $5 off and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter code LOCKEDON. Don't forget, that's code LOCKEDON for $5 off your first order with DoorDash. Welcome back. Glad to have you joining us here on our Wednesday episode of Locked On Seahawks. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. Joining me as always, Rob Rang. We are now six practices into training camp. It's crazy. We waited all this time, Rob, for football to return and finally be back on the field. And we are already a week into actual practices. We've had two padded practices now on the field. It just feels like we're getting closer and closer to real football. We'll see how things play out when September 13th comes around and teams have to travel for games. That's going to be the real test in this COVID-19 world. But reflecting on these six practices that have happened so far, again, four of them were with just a helmet on. Tough to evaluate players, but we have now seen two padded practices. So it's time for us to play a little bit of a game here. Three up, three down. We're going to look at three offensive players that have bolstered their stock. Maybe they've improved their chances of making the roster, or they've improved their chances of winning a starting job. And then we're going to look at three players that maybe have had the opposite happen to them, not competing as well as they expected for a starting spot, maybe increasing their chances of making the 53-man roster coming out of camp, going into the season. Let's start with the positives. Three up. What is a player that, through six practices, has really stood out to you, improving his stock for the 2020 season?
Well, I would have to start up front on the line of scrimmage with Cedric Ogbwe. You know, we mentioned him a little bit yesterday as a guy that really has just taken the bull by the horn, so to speak, and taken off at that presumed backup left tackle spot. Now, I say presumed backup left tackle spot because obviously, kind of like we talked about with Russell Wilson, you know, Dwayne Brown is your starter. But at the same time, given his age, given the fact that you have a new starter signed, Brandon Shell, at the right tackle position, Ogbwe has played both spots, and he has always been a remarkable athlete. He's got the long arms. He's got the light feet. There have been some questions about his toughness, some questions about his physicality, and yet those were two of the things that Pete Carroll specifically mentioned about, that he's been impressed with Ogbwe so far. So for me, Corbin, that's definitely where I'd have to start off as far as a player who has exceeded my personal expectations so far.
And I think that Ogbwe, he's also going to be playing himself into that sixth offensive lineman role that George Fant was so good at the last couple of years. I don't know that Seattle's going to have the need to use that near as much this year with Will Dissly being back, as long as he can stay healthy. We mentioned that yesterday, that Olsen and Dissly being on the field together, you don't necessarily now need to have that other 300-plus pounder coming into block, but they're still going to use that heavy formation occasionally. And Ogbwe has been the number one reserve on both tackle positions behind Dwayne Brown and Brandon Shell so far. So he's going to be that swing tackle, the guy that can play that sixth lineman role. He's even wearing George Fant's old number at number 74. And I was impressed yesterday, particularly watching him just in footwork drills. You can see the athleticism, and Mike Solari was getting fired up about it yesterday. This is a guy that has first round pedigree. He has had trouble staying healthy. As you mentioned, toughness has been questioned, but certainly he is leaving a good first impression on his new team out in Seattle. I'm going to go to the backfield. Not surprising, the running back guy that I am. DJ Dallas has been one of the real standouts in the first six practices at camp for me. And he's competing against Travis Homer, who was his teammate at Miami. They're now teammates in Seattle for that third down role. And what really stands out to me just from yesterday's practice, I wrote an article about this too. You and I are both baseball guys. We love watching the game. And you just have certain players. I'm going to mention Fernando Tatis Jr. right now with everything going on in the news cycle with him hitting a grand slam on 3-0 and drawing the ire of the other team's manager and his own manager. And his manager ended up walking back and saying he was okay with it. But Fernando Tatis Jr., when he hits the ball, there's a different sound. There's a distinct crack off the bat that you just don't hear from other players when they hit the ball. DJ Dallas, when he catches the football, there's a different sound when the ball hits his soft hands. I can't describe it, but it's different than when the other running backs catch it. He can just reach up there, real soft hands, and just plucks the ball out of the air. He was doing that over and over again yesterday in one-on-one drills against linebackers. And looking at his college tape, just like his former teammate, Travis Homer, both those guys are really good pass protectors back there. He can catch the football. And what's really impressed me in limited opportunities, they're not allowed to bring guys down to the ground, but he has been getting whacked by defenders. He's been getting the rookie treatment every time he's touched the ball, running the ball, and yet he just keeps plowing through guys. And so you've seen the toughness and the physicality that this kid runs with. He has not backed down from anybody so far in camp. And so I think he, of all the running backs back there, he has really improved his stock the most through these six practices. And Pete Carroll has mentioned him several times being a standout. And so good for you, DJ Dallas, here in a crowded backfield. He's carving out a role and maybe giving himself a chance to beat out Homer for that third down role.
Yeah, I think that's a possibility. And I certainly did not expect that to be the case. Frankly, I was surprised when Seattle made the selection of DJ Dallas, just because of the fact that I was as impressed as I was with Travis Homer a year ago. Now, obviously, Seattle had the situation with Rashad Penny, Chris Carson coming off the cracked hip, all of those different things. But when you watch Dallas on tape, you see a guy that has a running back build. He is kind of low to the ground and powerful and is able to kind of shuck off would-be tacklers, you know, as you just mentioned. And that's just so unusual for a guy that when he played it originally at Miami, he was a wide receiver. So the great hands doesn't surprise me, you know, but at the same time, the toughness is something that is going to surprise. And it's obviously something that created a lot of interest for the Seahawks, and that's why they select him. So I think that's a good one. I would mention another really young player that I think that sometimes gets overlooked just because we do tend to focus so much on the rookie class. And that would be the second year former undrafted free agent wideout Penny Hart. This is a player that played at Georgia State and was dynamic on tape. Had a chance to watch him at the Senior Bowl. I thought that he was terrific there as well. And I was shocked when he was not invited to the combine. But then when he had his pro day workout, you saw why. Because this is a small guy, and he also ran the 4.6s. And that usually does not equate to landing an NFL contract. But he's made some splashy plays. He does have terrific quickness, and it's football quickness, better than, you know, the times thing and all that kind of stuff. So he's another one who I think that is kind of exceeded expectations at this point. Do I think he's going to make the Seattle's roster? That remains to be seen. But considering the fact that Seattle has struggled a little bit with durability of some of its receivers, David Moore, Freddie Swain, et cetera, then Penny Hart's getting an opportunity, and he's taking full advantage of it.
And I didn't see much from Hart the first couple of practices, but since they put on the pads, he had easily his best day yesterday. He had a diving touchdown catch from Russell Wilson, and then he had a couple other passes that he hauled in that he had defenders suffocating him in coverage and was able to get his hands on the football. And that's the other thing with him. He's got those soft hands. He's a very reliable target. So I like that you mentioned that he's got the football quickness. It might not have translated necessarily to his testing numbers, but when you watch his Georgia State tape, he just jumped off the screen. It didn't matter who the other team was, who they were playing against. He was clearly, in my mind, an NFL caliber talent. When you watched what he could do after the catch, and you could see his ability as a kick returner as well, that might be how he still gets on this roster. We haven't seen how that's going to unfold just yet, how they're going to take care of their special team situation, replacing Tyler Lockett back there on kick and punt returns. Hart is going to be in the mix there, though, and I think yesterday he gave himself a nice little boost with his best practice so far of training camp. Now let's go to the other end of the spectrum. Three players that maybe haven't helped themselves out so far through six practices. I want to stick at the receiver position because you just mentioned David Moore. He missed just one practice. He's been out there. He's been participating in five of the six, but I just feel like he has been really quiet the first week of camp. He's made a handful of catches, but no big splashy plays. And then you got players like Penny Hart and Cody Thompson. Freddie Swain's been out the last couple of days, but the first few practices, he was playing really well. It seems like other guys are stepping up. John Ursua has been much more noticeable at camp. And David Moore has just kind of done what he has done way too much in regular season games. He's kind of gone into ghost mode. We've seen what he's done the last 2 years. When he has been really playing well, he's been putting up really big numbers. He's been a nice deep threat. And then you'll have three or four games where he doesn't do much, if anything. He's just been so wildly inconsistent. And we've talked about it time and time again. I think part of it has been the coaching staff not fully maximizing his talents, getting the ball to him on quick screens and stuff to let him make plays. But at the same time, it's also on the player when you have that many games where you just kind of disappear. He just has not been consistent enough. And this is a huge training camp for him because they have added so much competition at the position. And he only has 1 year left in his contract. If they wanted to cut him, there's going to be no dead money with him being a restricted free agent that got an original round tender. So if he's not one of your top five receivers, they will move on from it.
Well, exactly. And so that's why, David Moore is on my list here as well as guys who are just, unfortunately, in the first week or so of training camp has been disappointing. This is a guy that we, as you mentioned, we've talked about a lot. 6 foot, 215 pounds. He's got kind of that running back frame at the wide receiver position. And for a player who has struggled with consistency, you would like to see him start to kind of crack through that glass ceiling, so to speak, throughout this his fourth training camp. And to me, one of the things that is concerning is, of course, this training camp is very different than any of the other ones. Normally you'd have some time for players to kind of work their way into shape or work their way into the rotation. But the fact that we're not seeing Russell Wilson or Geno Smith, for that matter, really target this receiver, I think is a concern. You would think that he would be somebody that both of them would be working to try developing some rapport with. And instead, we're seeing kind of the opposite, that some of the other, relatively unknown wideouts are getting a lot more of attention, as we just mentioned with Penny Hart.
So let's go to the offensive line. We've talked so much about the center position. Ethan Posick getting the vast majority of the snaps so far with the first team. B.J. Finney, the free agent addition from Pittsburgh, gets a 2-year, $8 million contract. I was under the assumption, especially watching his film last year, that he was going to be the front runner for that position. And yet, here we are a week into camp, and it's been the exact opposite. It seems like, instead, the last couple days that we're seeing more of a leaning towards having Posick out there. Maybe there's a comfort level because Posick has snapped some to Russell Wilson in the past. Maybe it's that he's viewed as a little better run blocker. Maybe it's just the familiarity with the scheme since he's been playing for Mike Solari the last 2 years. Whatever it is, this has not been the start that I think B.J. Finney was envisioning. I think he thought this was going to be his best chance to start yet after being a key backup for the Steelers the last 4 years. And yet he's not in the mix of the guard positions. He is right now clearly the number two guy at the center position behind Posick. And then you've got Kyle Fuller nipping at his heels too, a player that Pete Carroll has name dropped a couple times. And so again, it's all about competition in Seattle. If you're not getting the job done, you're not going to play. You got to wonder if it's just been one of those things this first week where the coaching staff just hasn't been as impressed as they thought they were going to be with this guy that they invested money in.
Yeah, that's the thing is, B.J. Finney, played with Pittsburgh, his childhood, favorite team and all of that. And to leave Pittsburgh to possibly greener pastures here in Seattle, sign a free agent deal. I'm sure that he was thinking with Justin Britt being released and all of that, all the questions at Seattle at the center position, that Finney was thinking, okay, this is my best opportunity to start. And that certainly created a lot of excitement in the, for Seahawks fans. At the same time, for all those reasons that you just mentioned, Corbin, about the greater familiarity with you know, Posick and all of that, I think that in some ways this was predictable just because of everything that's going on and the fact that, that Posick does have an early advantage. But at the end of the game, or at the end of the day, I just thought that you would see Finney be able to be more effective in pass blocking as well as run blocking. This is a big man who is a really productive player at Kansas State, helped them be a very good running team in the Big 12, and I just haven't seen the ability to create push at the line of scrimmage in the snaps that I've watched. And then in pass protection, I almost wonder if it was a little bit of Pittsburgh scheme, because I've seen Finney kind of struggle a little bit in my perspective from what I've been able to see. Whereas Posick, on the other hand, has absolutely been one of the players that I think we should be mentioning as guys who are rising up. So I think that certainly the center position has been a little bit surprising so far.
Yeah, I would agree with you there on the pass protection stuff and the limited practice snaps that we've been able to see. And that's the thing. When you have that few of snaps, you don't want to jump to conclusions too quickly. And I have seen enough film to think that this guy is solid in pass pro, but haven't necessarily seen that on the practice field when he's had his opportunities. And Posick has looked really good. And I will tell you from seeing him yesterday, he does look like he has, again, added a little bit more muscle to his frame. He looks like a more formidable interior offensive lineman for Seattle. I still think he's not a guard in the NFL, but at the center position, he certainly's got the size, and that's his most natural spot, finally getting a chance to play there, the position he played most of his snaps at LSU. Real quick, the last one here isn't necessarily that he's not performing on the practice field or that he's not welcome in the locker room, because we know Luke Wilson is one of the most popular players on the Seahawks roster. But you have Greg Olsen out there who looks outstanding at 35 years of age. Will Dissly, another remarkable recovery from injury, as we talked about yesterday. And then you've got Colby Parkinson that looks like he's going to be coming back here pretty quickly. Pete Carroll sounded very optimistic about him being able to get on the field soon. So we may see the rookie out of Stanford out there making plays. You got a seventh rounder in Stephon Sullivan. And then, of course, Jacob Hollister, who finished third on the team in receiving yards and receptions last year. And so they've got so much talent and depth at that position. You're not going to be keeping five or six tight ends. You've got to feel, you got to believe, even though Luke Wilson has been the old reliable and he's a solid blocker, you can play him at the H-back position. You've got to believe with the younger talent with higher upside that they've got on the roster, particularly if Parkinson is able to get back here in the next week or two and he's going to be ready for the season opener. You have to think that Wilson being on a veteran, near veteran minimum 1-year deal, that he's going to be in potential trouble there because they just can't carry too many tight ends.
Yeah, I agree. I just think that it's a numbers game, and unfortunately the numbers for Luke Wilson are not in his favor. And in terms of just how deep Seattle is that position in terms of his age and in terms of his speed, I don't see – I mean, Luke Wilson was a damn good athlete for a long time, but when you watch him run a route in comparison, say, to Greg Olsen, who, of course, is older, it's just night and day difference. And so, yeah, I have a hard time seeing how Luke Wilson is going to be able to carve out a spot in this roster.
Now, of course, there are some injury concerns at that position. They've got some guys that have missed a lot of games, so we could see somebody going down, and players like Sullivan are very untested. But I think when it comes down to it, they're going to want to keep a player like Sullivan around if they can, rather than using a roster spot for a fourth tight end and a player like Wilson that we've already seen him max out. And he's probably now in the decline stage of his career. So again, this is nothing against Luke Wilson. He's been a fantastic player for the Seahawks for a long time. He gave them some really good snaps last year after Dissly got hurt and still is a solid player. I just think he's probably the odd man out, as you said, just because the talent and numbers game is working against him right now. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. Subscribe to our show on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcasts, by going to our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com. When we return for our Thursday show, we're going to be breaking down the latest from Seahawks training camp, some observations from practice number 7. Plus, we'll be looking at 3-up, 3-down on the defensive side of the football through the first week of camp. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. Go Hawks.